I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, October 13th, 2011. I would first of all like to excuse the Vice Mayor and Councilmember Fender, who are both out of town and unable to be with us this morning. First item on our agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday night's regular council meeting. Okay, page two, items 3A through 4C. Items 4D through 5A, Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, 5A, this is something that, a question that comes up a lot from residents. Is there, Mr. Clevenger, are you back there?
Yeah.
And it's talking here about, I think we're calling it crack seal. And people always ask, how do you guys determine what road you do? Is it based on volume? Is it based on time? And since you're here, I thought it'd be great to explain to people how you do determine.
We have our crack staff here.
We do have our crack staff. Yeah, thank you. That's why I thought we'd ask this morning.
I'm going to defer to Lenny. He can probably describe it a little bit better than I can.
I was going to defer back to Dan. Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, we have our pavement management system that we track our asphalt out there. We do surveys every year, residential, arterial, and collector streets. And from that, we have use the Army Corps of Engineers guidelines for selecting streets, and we analyze the cracks and the size of cracks and things like that, and we go through and do a forecast of what streets we do. So in this part of the contract, it's residential, arterial, and collectors. It's streets that are prepared for next year's treatments, maybe a fog seal or a slurry seal or possibly even an overlay. So we do the crack seal first and typically wait a year and come back and do another treatment after that.
So there's an actual program that's tracking the streets in the city, and it's not just random, oh, my street looks horrible. No, it's analytical tool that you guys are looking at the whole city, all 135 square miles.
That's correct. It's like I say, we've had over 25 years of data, and it programs it out and it forecasts. It's a micropaver. It's the name of our software. We've had it for years. And
great.
And in fact, like I say, it's great. It's a great amount of history and background to it. So.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for that crack presentation.
It is the crack presentation.
But it was. Items 5B through 5F, Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah, just on 5B, we're talking about drain covers, and but it doesn't say how many drain covers we're buying, which as someone who's inquisitive, I just have a... How many covers do I get for $84,000?
I'd like to know, do we have a software program that tracks manhole covers, too?
I bet we do. But the other question I had on those things, do they fall apart? Do we have increased demand because we're building more areas? Do people steal them? So then it's even more important for us to call the police if we see someone rolling a manhole cover, those kind of things, because it's expensive.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah.
So you actually hit all the things that we do. They do fall apart. Some of those are actually in the road. If you'll notice, some of the streets we have, they're actually, some of the catch basin grates are in the road, loads and things like that. We did have a rash of being stolen. We are now chaining them down, bolting and wilding them down to the frames themselves as we're doing our cleaning process. I don't know the number. I can get back to you on the number, how many we're purchasing, because we're buying frames, covers, and various other things, sundry items to get it together. I don't know the total number, but I'll get back with you on that.
Great. Thanks.
I love these great solutions.
Yeah.
Somebody, this is,
yes.
They're probably making a really good living doing storm drain grates. Why didn't I think of something like that? Gee. Great career.
They're cast. It's kind of cool.
It is cool. Yeah, that's right. Anything else on 5B through 5F?
Yes.
Councilmember Higgins.
Just 5F, Mayor. I just had a question. This is this is the Fire Police Training Center, and we're buying network hardware and cabling. I don't understand why these things aren't coming through this gentleman's department. So it's just that IT thing, which I didn't see your department on here, and I don't know, maybe I didn't read correctly. But
Diane's actually running the day-to-day operations, and she can talk on it specifically, but this was a joint effort. There still is a separate organization for IT for police, and we're trying to work more closely with them to have efficiencies.
This is a joint facility with both fire and police, and this is our effort. City IT is going to buy this equipment and support this equipment.
Okay, great. It wasn't clear. So, thank you.
All right. 5G through 6C. Councilmember Richens.
Can we talk about 5G just a little bit, about the chilled water extension line? The question I have is the merits of actually doing anything with the 5155 East building. And it seems like the line's going to be coming up from the central plant to the city, the 20 East Main building. Are we just running it past 5155? Or are we actually installing infrastructure in 5155? What's the vision there?
Morning, Mayor and Council. The chilled water system today goes along that pedestrian path from the plant along City Hall and through, comes actually through by the council chambers here. So the existing lines are in place, and the taps for where we're going to connect to it are already existing. So we're going to connect to those lines and go into the building with the chilled water.
But your question, Council Member, is that
why are we spending money on 5155 right now?
And I think the question that we struggle with is, as we have the opportunity to look at that and show that property to individuals, do we show it to them as it is and remodeled as in a current structure, or do we look at it as a scrape and rebuild? And I don't know what the cost is to put the one of the infrastructure challenges we have for that property is the current HVA system, and so, you know, there is a thought about, you know, if we have this available, then that might make the property more attractive for future tenants. So
I don't know. To me, those buildings are dinosaurs.
Well, I think it really does beg the question. You raise a good point.
Putting good money after bad.
Are we really going in the right direction as really set property? And we don't know.
Right.
I mean, you have a building there, but I think anyone who has looked at that building understands the challenges of reusing that building. Number one, just the configuration and how it's all put together, because it was a series of individual suites before, makes it a real challenge for a reuse. You know, it stayed because, why did it stay? We talked about this one time, and at one time, that was going to get raised as part of the Arts Center.
It's called value engineering.
Oh, okay. And yet, you can look at everything from a reuse and trying to shoehorn something in there, which I think is the easiest way to describe it, or literally to scrape it, and now you've got a pad that you can get creative on. Now, no one has the money right now to do that, but is it better? And we haven't really had that discussion. Maybe what we need to do is...
Yeah, can we maybe hold off on the 5155 part of the project?
What it is. The challenge we always have is we're doing these... the chill water now for this building, others because of the timing of the systems that serve this building are kind of running out their
lines. As long as you're running by there, it's easiest to go ahead and hook it in.
So that's fine. Let us certainly we'll move forward with this one, and we can approve this. We'll hold off on 5155 till we have a little more of a discussion. But also, let's look and see what the actual cost is to provide that, because we do have some tenants there that are, you know, the Shakespeare Group uses it for practice work. So it's not intense use, obviously, but we have to kind of balance out, you know, what if the HV system goes completely out there? We need to make sure we have this as an option if we needed to.
Okay.
But we'll look at it. I appreciate the concern. And that's it. We really haven't sat down and said, what is this to become? There's been a lot of discussion.
Maybe it's time to put a group together, whatever, to really have that discussion.
Sure.
Because I know we've been approached by other groups who have ideas. And those ideas have so far fallen short, but one of the challenges, how do we make what we have work within that footprint of the existing building? And that's tough to do.
It's not only the building itself, it's not the access to parking specifically. So there's some interesting challenges.
So and maybe what we ought to do is let's put together maybe a little group to start looking at the options. And one of the options is literally raising the building. And starting fresh with something that's unique and special and fits in with that, better interacts with the Arts Center, and we have a rail stop coming there soon.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about a lot of different things, you know, catering facilities that could serve the Arts Center, a visitor center that would complement the light rail stop, expanding it to more of an arts type of thing, taking what the Shakespeare is doing right now and really turn it into a true... we don't call them resident. What do we call them now, Dennis? Affiliates.
Resident.
You know, our base of affiliates, and Yeah, the Shakespeare Company, for example, does use that, and it is they are down there a lot. It brings a lot of people into downtown, and as we move toward trying to look at more of an arts-driven economy rather than just an amenity, there are some economic benefits we can have there. And because of the access problems, it makes commercial ventures a little bit challenging. It doesn't make specialized things that relate to the Arts Center as challenging because they don't need that kind of access. So maybe it's time we got serious about some formal discussions on that. Thanks for raising that point.
And just a couple of comments. I apologize. I thought I heard Mesa City Plaza. On the 51 and 55, the existing system, AC system that's in there, is pretty much at its useful life. And so this project was just going to stub these lines just inside the building and cap them. So if anybody were to use that building,
it's regardless of the use,
replacement of the existing systems or the chilled water were the two options.
This is one of those pay a little amount now or a lot later if you come in and tap into that system.
Yeah, and the unit prices we received on these bids were fairly good. So that's why we thought either include it now or hold off.
Okay. Councilman Higgins?
If the stub was coming down to a site that we someday decide to level, would it be available for the next building?
The line runs right past it now. The stub out is specific to those buildings. The line that runs right past us, you can tap, a new building would tap right into those lines.
The idea, as long as you got the hole open, you might as well do the stubs right now, is I think what you're saying, right?
Yeah, it would be.
As long as you're on site. Maybe.
And we may have to relocate them a few feet if we were to demo those buildings in the future. But putting them in now would be advantageous because we'd have the valves and everything in place, so we wouldn't have to take the existing chilled water down to put those lines in the future. So
what do they run in those buildings now, like 5-ton AC units, just regular heat pump type thing?
Yeah, just regular heat pump.
How much are we spending to put the taps in then?
The bid on this was about $306,000. The majority of this is to get the chilled water to the Mesa City Plaza.
Right.
But we need a breakout.
Can you break out the portion? I mean, because I can buy $5,000 air conditioning units a couple of times over probably for the money we're going to spend putting in. So I don't know.
Agreed. It is probably in the 50,000 range to get
I can
put in.
Put 15 years of life on, five or six new air conditioning units on those for that money. So.
Yeah.
I don't know that's the right timing for it.
Okay.
Okay, 6D through 7C. Anything before 7A? All right, Mr. Brady, you want to go over 7A for us? 7A, B, and C, and D?
Mayor and Council, we've had the opportunity to present a couple of different times the summary to the agreements with the Chicago Cubs. You have now in front of you the all of the documents, the facilities use agreement, the development agreement, and the option agreement. Those have been posted online since Friday for the public to view and receive. The deal points that we've discussed in the past have not changed. I think they're fairly consistent. The only addition, I think that a slight variation from some of the discussions we've had has to do with the option property, where the Cubs have requested that they are spending some time helping us recruit potential development to the Riverview site, but not necessarily directly associated with the identified option properties. They've been working with us at looking at other developments related to the 25 acres in the northeast corner, and they were just they requested that as part of their efforts to do that, if we were able to sign a contract with a developer prior to the opening, is it the opening?
Yes.
The opening of spring training facility, that would give them credit or allow them to continue to extend their option agreement. So that's just one minor change. It kind of helps them keep their interest in assisting us, and certainly they've in this past week they've actually been very helpful in opening up some doors for us to have some discussions with some development for that area. So that's really the only major change, I would say, that from what we've talked about in the past, we've briefed council. So again, the agreement is there before you. I don't know if there's any specific questions. Would you like me to go in more detail?
No, I just wanted to give the update. And I also wanted to know when those agreements were actually posted.
Yeah, we were able to post them on Friday afternoon,
last
I believe.
Last Thursday.
I'm sorry.
Councilor Higgins.
And were we able to get all the, there was a question because we referenced in those documents.
There were some exhibits.
The exhibits
were all available also?
The exhibits actually, most were available, the diagrams, and showing how the documents will be implemented or what will occur in the documents. They were available on Thursday. Some of the more detailed, the legalese, the legal description, the insurance provisions. There's a document called Permitted Exceptions, which deal with the title exceptions for the property. They will be available today. They were not available last week. We were still negotiating some, and we were still finalizing some
but
of those.
We're not negotiating the legal descriptions.
No.
Or the title exceptions. That's lawyer talk.
How about, I think it was somebody asked about, we referenced comparables. What was it?
The appraisal.
Thank you. Yeah. The appraisal.
They were put online, so they have been made available to the public
last week too. Or
As soon as we got that email, I think we had it up on Monday.
Fantastic.
I think we had it on Monday morning.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and both appraisals are in place. Both the one the city did, as well as one the Cubs have done. And as we explained, I think in the past, obviously you had two different appraisals done for two different clients. They weren't exactly the same.
Shocking.
Shocking, I know it is. I thought appraisal
simply
was
simply shocking.
I thought appraisals was a pure science, but apparently not. So what we did was in the agreement to get to the $9 square foot, what we were able to find that each of the appraisers, while they use a variety of different comps to compare pricing, that we did find some common parcels that they agreed to work. They use as their comparables for the evaluation of determining the price for Riverview, and we then took those, I think it was three or four properties that each one of them had looked at, and from there we found the average that worked out best. It got to the $9 a square foot. So we felt like that was a fair compromise since both the appraisers had looked at the same properties and then came up with a reasonable dollar amount, and that's the number that we used, ultimately settled on. So.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Items 8A through 9A. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I have a comment on 8B. I know you'll be surprised that I will not pull this off because it's a pawn shop council use permit in District 3. But what I wanted to do is offer my thanks to staff and to the applicant for working very hard on this site. I think the stipulations for improvement to the building and to the site will really help transform a vacant strip center that really needs it. The other issue I think that's important is this applicant took care to advise the city of its track record in working with the communities that they're in terms of the groups that they support. This particular company does a lot of business with musical instruments and has indicated a strong desire to partner with the Mesa Arts Center or arts organizations who use it for programs with kids, and also are very open to working with Mesa United Way. And it's nice to have companies up front express that interest in working with us. But the improvements to the site are pretty very significant, and I think will help that corner. So thanks, Mayor.
Good. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Any other items? Okay. Next item is to hear a presentation discuss City Edge Financial System Replacement Project. Mr. Odom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. It's been about a year since we were here with you to speak about City Edge, and so we thought it was a good opportunity to bring you up to date on where we're at with the project. Essentially, you know, we want to start out with an overview again of what City Edge really includes. City Edge is the project that's going to be replacing most of the major business systems within the city. So our core financial systems, our budget system, the purchasing system, timekeeping, payroll, human resources. Those are the major systems that are included in City Edge. And with that, we have a four-phase project that we started with. At this point in time, we're very pleased to say that the project is on time and on budget across all phases. We do have all of the phases up and active at this point in time. So it's a very busy project with a lot of activity taking place. The project timeline, the original project timeline, is a 34-month project. So although it's been a year since we were here visiting with you, what you can see is we're really only about a third of the way through this project. And we have a significant amount of work left to do, and so we expect we'll be providing you with some additional updates over the coming 2 years as we continue to work on this project. Within the phases, the first phase is the performance budget and management area, followed by the financials, and then the main activity associated with human resources and payroll. We have some individual phases that kind of complement those related to timekeeping, vendor self-service, which is going to bring a whole new level of functionality to the city, as well as open enrollment and employee self-service after we go live on the human resources new solution. We do have major milestones that we'd like to make you aware of. We did go live with the online recruiting system, NeoGov, back in May. And on November 1st, we will have our first go live within the financial suite, and that is for the performance budget and management solution. The budgeting area actually has three individual go lives that they'll go through. This first go live is going to bring the live application online to the budget department, so that they're able to go in and begin doing their preparations for the fiscal year 12-13 budget. We'll see our departments start their training in January so that they actually build their fiscal 12-13 budget in the new system. And then when the financial system goes live in July, we'll have a third go live, which is associated with our first ability to do budget to actual reporting, which will come in August. So three phases of go live just associated with the budget area. As we've mentioned, this is a very large project. It's simply the largest business project the city's ever undertaken. If you were to come and visit within our project site, we have 72 seats. They're full. In between the contractors, the vendors that are on site, the project managers, the technical team, the functional staff that's supporting the project, we have 72 seats in the project space, and we're full. We actually need a little more space as we start to go into the build phase, as we bring extended city staff in to assist with testing, training, and the ongoing effort associated with the project. One of the things that we've been very cognizant of in this project is making sure that this is truly a citywide project. On average, we have somewhere between 200 and 300 citywide contacts per month with staff outside of the project. This can be in the form of readiness coaches. Each of our departments has a readiness coach that's working with us to remain informed of what's happening on the project. Each of the individual teams have extended team members, the budget team, the performance management team. We have 80 folks that are getting ready to go through training that are going to learn how to use the system. They'll go through workshops to build their budgets with the project team. Across all of the different phases, we have multiple staff members across the city representing all departments participating. One of the things that is also kind of new in the last 3 to 4 months is we've reached a point where we have enough activity in our project that we really need some guidance and assistance with our decision making in some of our critical areas, in particular related to timekeeping. We are going to be delivering an automated solution to the city for timekeeping. This brings with it a lot of opportunity for interpreting how we actually build our rules in the system. When you take something that today is a human process and have to turn it into an automated process, we need to make sure that we're consistent in our application of our rules. And so our executive steering committee is also very involved in this project. In addition to regular status meetings with them, they have become the basis of our decision panel. All foundational decisions that are bubbling up through the project are being presented to executive steering, which includes our deputy city managers and designees as part of that process. So the project, again, we're very pleased with the level of involvement across the city that we've had. Project benefits, it goes without saying that this is really a paradigm shifting change project for the city. Essentially, today's transactions are going to be able to be tomorrow's reports, whether it be expenditures, payables, receivables, hours worked, purchase orders. We're no longer going to find ourselves in a situation where we're lagging anywhere from 15 to 40 days waiting for financial data. Managers are going to have the opportunity to have real-time information available at their fingertips, And that's going to really help them in how we provide services to the city, the products that we bring on board, as well as, you know, the tools that we give to our employees to do the jobs that they're doing on a day-in, day-out basis. And we expect great efficiencies to come with this system. What's been interesting and really intriguing is as the extended team members and folks across the city start to understand what this system can do, you know, you just kind of see that little cartoon bubble pop up above their head and they start to think, well, can we do this? Can we do that? And it's really exciting as people are starting to see the opportunities that this system's going to bring to what they do day in, day out. Lastly, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we touch upon is this system is providing us with the platform to really look across all of our business processes and make sure that we're bringing best practices to bear. We are coming off of a 35-year-old financial system. It has a lot of colloquial management practices associated with it. And at the heart of the AMS Advantage system is a system that was built from the ground up for government. So we are going to be leveraging that, doing it in context of how Mesa does business, but at the same time, it's really going to help us improve the standards and consistency that we have across our financial reporting, our timekeeping, certainly overall operations within the business systems that we'll be delivering with this system. Any questions?
Questions?
Mayor, can I just quickly? We kind of skimmed through. There's a lot of back behind a lot of these slides, but let me just, one of the things that we're finding as we go forward, is touched on just a little bit in the presentation. As we move towards this automation, it really begins to standardize more and more our practices, especially on timekeeping and payroll issues. And most likely that will cause us to have to come back to the council as we look at our personnel rules and how we account for time to make sure it's consistent, one with federal labor standards, and making sure that application is consistent across the organization. So we are putting together a list of items that will impact our personnel rules, and it's actually to our betterment. It just puts us more consistent across the organization.
Put a little context. I mean, I know you mentioned it, but basically our timekeeping is a 1960s system, which is primarily manual.
It's very, yes.
Yeah, just like filling out timesheets that everyone used to do. You know, we're not even in on an automated time clock throughout the city. It's filling out timesheets, manually calculating times, and then making decisions as far as time and,
right.
and those kind of things.
You can imagine with the diversity of services and the time schedules that some of our employees have to work because we're a 24/7 operation, and the fractions of times they use, the times they have to work on holidays or different hours of the day or have to be on standby. There's a lot of different variations that make it's not the typical 8 to 5 or in our case, you know, 7 to 6 program. It can be very complex, but that's one of the nice things about the automation. It allows for us that calculation to take place in a more maybe consistent and accurate perspective. But
the other thing is that it eliminates hopefully human error.
Or not only error, but interpretation.
Interpretation, yeah. I mean, like you said, it standardizes, and that's just that's just a natural product when you have a completely human system.
Right. So we'll be bringing some of those discussions and how we're going to improve that. But we think overall, we already have seen just it's helping us as an organization understand how to really tighten up our processes and procedures and to be consistent across the organization. And so before we conclude today we've done a really good, I think we've tried very hard to recognize the hard work of certainly the folks you see here in front of you and the many, many other employees that are down working in City Edge. What we don't want to forget, because we recognize that's a lot of hard work and effort, is what we're asking, though, is there are a lot of employees that are still back at the office that now don't have as many of their colleagues sitting around helping carry the workload because they're down getting the training, and they're also having to carry the work. And so we want to make sure we recognize them and appreciate those that maybe aren't necessarily fully engaged right now in City Edge, but because they have to stay back at the home front and keep things going, that's also, we appreciate their work also. So thank you.
You know, I appreciate the fact that I think the misconception is that when you go through a systems change that this is all computer work, and actually the computer side of this is a very, very small part. It's the end product, but the systems, meaning the
process.
The process, which is all a human system, is what really gets changed, and that's like, Valerie. And by the way, I'm very impressed. I've never heard the word colloquial used in a presentation.
Okay.
I think that's a first.
All right,
be the word.
That's a great word.
Anytime you're around Valerie, there's always a unique a word that she vocabulary is amazing. She can.
So I have noted this down. Colloquial.
Word of the day.
Call her for Scrabble.
Call her for Scrabble. Yeah,
absolutely. Colloquial would be worth how many points?
Yeah, are you on
that's
words
a big,
with friends?
That's a good
one. I mean, with friends. Yeah,
yeah. No, and I being involved in several of these, none of this size or magnitude, but in a previous life, I can tell you this is not an easy task. But at the end of the day, if it goes right, it's the benefits far outweigh what everyone goes through. So I'm excited to see this moving forward. And I look forward to the next report and the next step and the next step until we get full implementation or go live. That was another. I like
go
that.
Lives.
So we're going to cast off the colloquial and go live with the new.
That's correct.
Okay, good. All right, any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is to acknowledge receipt of minutes in various boards and committees. A motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Hear reports of meetings or conference attended. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Last Friday night, I had the honor to represent you and the council at the annual gala for the NAACP East Valley chapter. And it was a great gathering. For nearly 50 years, this chapter has worked very hard in all the East Valley cities on issues of discrimination, hatred, bigotry, and they had some awards for some outstanding individuals in our community. And we're very proud that once again they chose to have their annual meeting here in our community. We've had the majority of the meetings over the last 15 years of their gala, and so that was very welcome in our community. Also, Saturday morning I had the opportunity to attend educational session for residents put on by our fire department at Fiesta Mall in teaching residents how to use the new CPR technique. And yes, I think there is actually photographic proof of me working on a dummy, and I was not the dummy, but learning the new technique, and I've decided it's very, very hard work, and I understand why the firefighters do it in rotation. But I want to thank our fire department for reaching out to the community. They've actually been working on teaching thousands of individuals in our community the new techniques that have significantly saved lives in our community, and we appreciate that educational outreach. Thanks.
Thank you. Anything else? I have a couple of events that I had the opportunity to attend since we haven't met in a couple weeks. Last week, the Dobson Ranch Town Hall, which was very well attended, and I'd like to thank everyone, especially since we were competing with the Diamondbacks playoff game. We still had basically a full house and some great interaction and good questions there. And then the next night I had the opportunity to go speak at the Red Mountain, the Red Mountain United Methodist Church community event, where we had about 60 or 70 citizens who were asked some great questions, had a good dialogue back and forth. And I really appreciate the opportunity to go to these, and it's always fun. You never know what's going to be asked, and they never know what answer I'm going to make up. So, no, we get a good opportunity to ask the basic questions and find out what's important to for our residents. Also, we had the opportunity last Thursday to attend the official unveiling of the ASLABS, or the Arizona Laboratories for Security and Defense Research, ASLABS, out at we forevermore will not refer to this as the Air Force Research Lab at the former Williams Air Force Base. It is now ASLABS. We had a great event last week, and it's pretty exciting. And then Mr. Brady and I afterwards got an update from Alion, who is our, what would you call them, administrator? They're running the labs for us.
It's
property man, whatever it is. They're involved in a lot of defense and homeland security research and deal with high security locations around the country. And they gave us an update and some pretty exciting things going on there, including something we had not really thought of, and that was the number of private companies that were teaming with the Air Force and doing research there before the Air Force announced they were moving out. So these companies moved out, assuming that this was going to shut down. Now that it hasn't shut down, there's a lot of former users of that facility who are coming back and saying and inquiring as to whether they might want to come back. And that's something I don't think we had we'd really anticipated happening this quickly. So there's some great things going on out there, some awesome opportunities, and I think this is going to prove to be everything we thought it could be, which is a great asset not only for Mesa, but for the Gateway area, the East Valley, Pinal County, and the state of Arizona. This is really a state asset. This is not even a Mesa asset. It's a state asset. So appreciate that, and that was a lot of fun. Anything else? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, this Saturday, October 15th, the Vice Mayor will be hosting a District 6 pancake breakfast at the Station 212, which is at Ellsworth and Guadalupe, more or less. Also on Saturday, there is a express recycling event from 8 to noon at the East Mesa Service Center. So encourage residents that they have any appliances or computers, electronics that they need to get rid of, that this is a free event. Encourage them to bring their recycled items to the East Mesa Service Center. Our next council meeting will be on Monday, the October 17th. We'll start at 5:15. That'll be preceded by a Community and Cultural Development Committee meeting at 3:30 p.m. Thank you.
And one other thing I'd like to bring up is we've had our first IMESA Village meeting, Kathy. Great success. We have our next one, I believe, is next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, the 19th, at for the Superstition Gateway Village, which will be held at the Power Square Mall, which is 2055 South Power Road. That's Power and Baseline. Power and Baseline. Oh, okay, that's right. Good. So everyone is invited. Please come out, share your ideas, find out what others are thinking, and you can always go online to IMESA, go to the mesaaz.gov, find the IMESA site, go from there, and you can always find out what other people are thinking and share your ideas by going online. But if you want to be there in person, next Wednesday night, the 19th. Okay. Is there anything else from the council? No request to speak from the public? Thank you, Dan. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Glover, second from Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.